Hello, I am the barrister Stephen Barrett, and I note that the question of international law keeps being dropped like a clanger in public life at the moment, largely as a desperate attempt to criticise President Trump. But other than saying I don't think that anything Mr. Trump has done is unlawful, certainly not a breach of international law. I thought it would be much more useful to explain what international law is. It strikes me that a lot of people are simply mouthing off on this topic without actually knowing it. Right, first of all, and not wishing to overcomplicate, there are two types of international law now. And that's because the one type that I belong to, that I practiced in, that I'm qualified in, is called private international law. And we basically think that the public international lawyers have gone a bit bonkers. You've guessed it, public international law is the other one. And that's the one that's causing all the bother right now. Okay? But you just park that concept. Let's go back to the very beginning. What is international law? When did it start? Well, at its heart, international law has been called and is contracts between kings. We know those now as treaties. So, really, this is a type of law that begins as a series of promises between sovereign individuals. Remember, if you go back far enough, the nation state really is the person governing it, and it's hard to separate them from each other. That's only something we started doing relatively recently in the 17th century. So, these are the contracts between kings. A series of promises that kings make each other. Some of the oldest ones are about 6,000 years old. We've still got them. But because I'm British and fiercely patriotic, I'm going to talk about the ones that are only 3,500 years old, which are between the Egyptian pharaoh and the kings in Hattusa, the Hittite Empire. It's what we now call Turkey, but it's a particularly barren and empty part of Turkey now. Back then, it must have supported life much better than it does now. It really doesn't support life terribly well. But Hattusa and Egypt aside, it's just this idea that international law is a contract signed between two kings. And that's how it was for a very long period. Up until the end of the Second World War, nobody seriously argued that international law was anything different from that. As I said, we private international lawyers, we still operate on that basis. There are 194 different countries, and each one deals with international law in a different way. We might return to this. But in private international law, that doesn't cause any bother either. We deal with it slightly differently from the French, and slightly differently from the Germans, and it doesn't cause any problems. Public international law causes problems. And that's because since the Second World War, they've been really trying to blow up this concept, realistically and in all honesty, to give themselves a power base. Shock, horror, everybody breathes in, but that's what's been going on. And so when people fling around allegations at Mr. Trump, they are very seldom relying on a treaty. They can't really point to a treaty that Mr. Trump has signed that he has broken. That said, you can point to the UN Charter. And part of our difference dealing with that here in the UK is that we pick and choose which bits of the UN we like. The Americans ostensibly approve all of it. But bad actors would say President Trump has breached Article 2, which is a very general term. President Trump would come right back with Article 52 saying, no, I'm doing this in the interest of national and international security. And if he's acting in the interest of international and national security, Article 52 lets him do what he wants. So even on the UN's own terms, Mr. Trump is fine. But I want to talk to you about this darker side of international law, which is why it's all become so woolly. In terms of what has happened, the best example is probably to take something like the International Court of Justice. So, the International Court of Justice is signed and created by a treaty in San Francisco in 1945. It's then Article 38. You don't need to know anything else about it, just know that it's then Article 38 is very boring. At some point, that Article 38 expands. and becomes a list of things that the International Court of Justice will consider to be binding law. Now, obviously, it says treaties, and treaties come first. But then it says something called customary international law, and it goes on to suggest that the writings of academics might be binding, might create law. This is obviously tosh. This is not what mankind has understood for thousands of years in terms of what international law means. My jurisdiction, if you're watching this from the UK, our jurisdiction just goes, well, I don't care, because we can pick and choose between them. But we really need to, I think, at least address what is going on here when the people who are expanding public international law are trying to shoehorn in all sorts of law. What does it mean to be a source of law? Well, in my jurisdiction, Parliament is a source of law because we're a democracy. Okay, so if there's a source of law that's not Parliament, that's inherently not democratic. That's inherently tyrannical or despotic or dictatorship. That's what that is. And these public international lawyers have, since the Second World War, been trying to push this. I doubt the United States president takes much credence in it. As I said, it's only in what is now Article 38.1 of the Charter of the International Court of Justice. It's just one body of international law, so everybody's free to completely ignore it. Again, after the Second World War, we started to see the creation of constructs of international law. The UN is the obvious first one, but it's no different really from the EU or the ECHR. And just so I'm not being exclusionary, that's the European Union and the European Court of Human Rights. Both are conflections, both are constructions of international law. It won't surprise you that all three of them conflict. It won't surprise you that all three of them pretend to be protecting us all for our own good from our foolish democratic ideas. All three of them have a list of what they consider to be fundamental rights. Broadly, they agree, but in some places, they disagree. The idea that you have to obey a treaty was really the core of international law. But of course, if the king dies, the new king's not going to want to honour the treaty that the old king signed. And that was a very understandable part of the treaty-based system. In our post-World War II era, you would think that the construction, these constructions of international law would have to obey international law. But they often don't. And the best example of that is that the EU, by treaty, was supposed to, by the last treaty, which is the Treaty of Lisbon, about 2007, it was supposed to join the European Court of Human Rights. It hasn't done so. If you want to get dramatic about breaching international law, that's a major breach of international law. It says it hasn't because its own court says it hasn't. You get this a lot in international law. You get black is white, up is down, every case is dependent on its merits. Every time you find a lawyer saying that, you found a shyster. Law is the consistent application of rules. And international law, public international law, really suffers from a desperate inconsistent application of rules. They created this concept of customary international law. Now, even that, I mean, I'm not even going to bother explaining the idea that an academic can create law. That's obviously bonkers. But let's just at least engage intellectually for a moment with the idea of customary international law. Right. What did they say on their own terms? They say, well, if states all behave in a certain way, then that becomes binding on states to carry on behaving in that way. Right. I don't think that makes any logical sense at all. If all states start murdering babies and they carry on murdering babies, the state that stops murdering babies is not obviously wrong, morally or legally. But it gets even weirder than that if you actually listen to the public international lawyers, which I largely advise you not to do. The public international lawyers say not only that, but obviously if you disagreed with what has become custom, then you can basically opt out. So if you've long-term disagreed, so if custom says that slavery is illegal, but you've always said, hey, I love slavery, then you're allowed to have slavery. But the guy who you just, I think you're, I hope you're seeing the complete nonsense of this. And the apex of this, where it sort of disappears up its own head into its own fundament, is that, of course, all of these things must be viewed on their own bases. And that, as I said, that's pure shysterdom. So what we need to do is get our understanding of international law back to the idea that we are bound by treaties. Now, in the United States, they are bound by treaties that they have ratified in the specific, and their constitution allows their president to ratify treaties, which is interesting. That means a president can also unratify a treaty. So if President Trump wants to, he can leave the UN. Both us and the US cherry pick from the UN. So we join both the International Court of Justice and the International Criminal Court. The Americans don't bother with the International Criminal Court. Probably better off, more wisdom to their elbow, to be perfectly honest. But this idea that things should be treaty-based really would restore a concept of international law. Then using their own regards, if President Trump was going to do something that breached the UN Charter, and by the way, he's always advised before he acts, then he'd simply unratify that treaty and he would be unbound by it, and then he could carry out his actions. And that's what a lot of the more hawkish Americans are saying. We don't care about what your UN Charter says. You know, we've got Article 2 of our Constitution. And that's a perfectly legitimate position for a state to take, that domestic law trumps international law. That is effectively our position, although I always think we're slightly more diplomatic than that. We in the United Kingdom say we will sign a treaty, and then if Parliament puts it into an Act of Parliament, then we're bound by it. And if Parliament removes it, then we're not. This was the whole process of Theresa May trying to leave the EU. Remember the court case of Miller 1? She tried to leave without repealing the statute that had put the treaty into our law, and that was obviously stupid, obviously doomed to fail, as I indeed advised her government at the time. I hope I've made some vague sense on what international law is. It is and should remain treaty-based. Sovereign nations should be bound by the treaties that they make and then that they choose to continue to abide by. Otherwise, international law ends up being sovereign. International law ends up being in charge. This is why the post-war academics loved it, because it really does become a charter for communism. It becomes an ability to subject a state to communism without it voluntarily ever signing up to it, all in the name of our best interests, of course. But you need to start treating international law with kid gloves. You need to understand, certainly if you're watching this from the United Kingdom, it's never going to be more important than our domestic law. It's not. What matters is the United Kingdom law. That's it. We show the decency and the courtesy of incorporating some of it for a period of time. We never incorporate all of it. We never incorporate it forever. We choose what we are bound by. And that's a very sensible way to approach the world. I hope this has made some sense of international law, but please, the next time somebody just says, this breaches international law, please bear in mind that international law is also breached all of the time, and it doesn't really exist as a permanent structure. Every state deals with it in its own way, and it's simply absurd to try and blame President Trump.